The Tights and Fights podcast, for over 6 years, a revolutionary force in sports and entertainment.
Yeah! Here comes the hound. Here comes the Danielle. Here comes the Lindsay. They are the panel. They've got a podcast. Tights and Fights is the name.
Welcome to Tights and Fights, the show that discusses wrestling with the sincerity and hilarity that it deserves. I'm the new Catch-Free Lublin, Hal Lublin, and I'm joined today by my fellow member of the Nation of Conversation, Dan the Danimal Steel, Danielle Radford.
I love that because it works in two ways. It is both about the Danimal Steel and also yes. A little bit of a Danielle Steel there in there. Mm-hmm. Speaking of, obviously, our favorite romance writer, Lindsay Kelk, is not with us today. But I like to think that just yes. A little bit of stink on there, I can help represent the Kelkness of it all with there too, with my nice little romance name.
It's like she's watching over us.
Oh.
It's like you're Firestorm and she's the professor right now. You've merged
yes,
and she's just
yes.
sort of there going like, don't forget to put Danielle Steel in there somewhere.
Love it.
Don't tell her I said that Danielle Steel is her favorite author. It might not be true. But maybe it is. She's not here. We get to decide. We got a lot to talk about with our guests shortly. I'm very excited about it. You'll soon learn why. But first, let's talk about some of the wrestling that happened this week. In the absence of Rhea Ripley, they held a battle royal to determine the new women's champion on Raw, and it was won by Becky Lynch, which has led to, I don't know if you saw this, Danielle, Becky Hogan was trending on Twitter for a while.
I did see that. I know that we're going to disagree on this one. I think that right now, going into the draft, it is the right decision. The draft, the whole point is to shake things up, and we don't want to have to worry too much with like a new champion or any of that stuff. You just get somebody in there that you know is going to be in the pocket. At least what I'm hoping is going to happen. Because, you know, I've been like waiting for, I think that this is Liv Morgan's time to like step it on up. I think you have her get built up as a heel. You have her take it off Becky and really take it off Becky. And when you do that, not only do I think her character is going to be extra locked in, but you're really going to believe that she can get this off of Rhea, because Rhea had been built up for so long, this incredibly long championship run, that when you have someone take it off of her, you do want it to be like it's someone that we believe can take it off of her. And I want Liv to get it clean. I think that she should beat Becky and then take on Rhea and then retain the belt. I think that that would make her even more of a credible champion. And that's going to get her to that spot that I feel like she's right there. And if it weren't for maybe like some injuries and other things, she already would have been. She's been a champion. It was a fun run. I think that she's set up to have a good run now. And that's why I think that having Becky do it now is the right decision, so that we can get Liv into the right place, so that when this does happen for her, it's going to mean as much as it should.
Allow me to offer the counter argument. I think those are all very salient points. Yeah. I believe that they missed an opportunity. They made the safest possible choice. Like the obvious choice
is it was safe.
Becky's been champion a bunch of times. She's great at it. I think the Becky Hogan stuff is sour grapes, because everybody, it seems specifically with women wrestlers, people lock into who their favorite is, and then everybody else is trash if they get in their way.
It's very Stan Warsies. It's like what happens in like female hip hop, where it gets really like Stanny and weird.
I agree with you. I think Rhea's gonna, already people were cheering her. She was like the coolest of heels. Now she's got she was injured and her reign was cut short. Who cut her reign short but Liv Morgan, who is coming back and exacting revenge because Rhea Ripley put her out. However, things have changed since then.
Yep.
Liv is, they were happy to have her back. They missed an opportunity to do a hard turn there. I think that Liv Morgan is perfectly set up to be a honky-tonk man, where she wins in a devious way. She's an absolute chicken shit heel who pretends to be tough and acts crazy but does not want to fight. Or you just do a different version of her character, where that's sort of what it's become, is she thinks she deserves the belt. Nobody else deserves it. And that's where it is. It's just a very selfish thing. And then Rhea takes it off her. There's no, in my mind, absolutely no logical reason why she should have to take it off of Becky first. You could play it a million different ways, and I think she could pull it off a million different ways. I thought it was a weak sauce, safe choice in an era where, not that they're taking risks, but they're a little bit bolder in their creativity and planning. This felt like just super safe. I'm sure it'll be fine, but...
Yeah, even with, like, the run to them going into the ring, they did something new, which was great, by the way. Like, Becky taking it and being like, I want to try on another hat. I didn't do the accent because I know better. But I'm going to try on another hat. And then going up and having that great moment with Maxine, which paid off her getting berated by Chad Gable earlier, calling her princess and all those other things. Like, having Becky come in and having her light a fire under Maxine. And then also, I felt like to me, it was a little thing to the audience of being like, hey, like, we want you to know that we had the bad guy say that. We don't want you to think it's okay for you to be calling Maxine a princess.
This is your first time fighting for a world championship, right? You go out there, you show everybody why it won't be your last, okay?
Sometimes some audiences, you do have to let them know, like, hey, just so you know, none of the good guys agree. you can't say that. Don't be a dick. So that was great. And yeah, that whole moment of her going in. Oh, also, we got to see Uncle Regal for a second, which was fantastic.
Yeah, I really like Gable as a heel. Here's my hope. And this is another thing that the Becky winning the belt again sort of like makes me a little iffy. Which is that Sami Zayn is a super safe choice to be the Intercontinental Champion. He's held it before. He can play the underdog for a million years that it's fine and people will be behind him. Obviously had a great WrestleMania match. The guy can work in the ring. Gable would have been the riskier choice to go in as a face, but I think also the more rewarding to have him win it because he had an actual story to pay off that tracks rather than the ever since Roman beat me, it's been bad, even though you won the main event of night one of WrestleMania a year ago, like no one of us would remember. But if the whole point was to build up Sami as champion, only to have Gable take it from him a month later, I'm on board with that. If Gable loses this match while he's building this heel persona, I think that could be incredibly damaging because all he's done before is lose.
I think that's a mistake. I think that would be a mistake.
Win. Yeah. He has to win.
It has to be if you switch up your attitude and you show that you are now more vicious and more willing to do whatever it takes to win. Like, again, literally ripping a man out of the arms of his wife, like yelling at all of these people who we as the audience have grown to love and telling them that basically they're worthless. I don't think that you can have him lose. Yeah, I think that would be really, really damaging. I'm hoping that that's not what it is. And Sammy, I do love Sammy. You know, hopefully he'll be going for a bigger belt at some point. But for Gable, you got to put something on him. He has to have a belt. He has to have something on him. And Sammy's the one y'all got him fighting with now. So he's got to be the one that you give that to. Especially, again, he ripped the man out of his wife's arms in his hometown. He's made that hard turn into being evil. That has to pay off.
Also, this is a good opportunity. I think Julian might have said this already in the chat, so I will give you credit for it, Julian. But to have the Creed brothers be his new heaters and get rid of everybody else, have the Creed brothers and Ivy there
that
as
was
heels,
what,
which is what Julian was saying, which is, I agree, 100% the right move. You can put Otis and Akira on their own with Maxine. And have them trying to figure out their place. I think they all are. Akira and Otis are obviously really talented and really fun to watch. I think Maxine has an incredibly high ceiling. She obviously has the look. I think she is a good performer. She is a gymnast and cheerleader, so she's get the physicality she's going to get better and better at, and she's already improved. Like, she looked great. Her little exchange with
Nia
Jax. You
can see she's working at it.
Great, and she's willing to work hard on it. So
speaking of, you can also, credit where credit is due, you can also tell that Nia Jax has been putting in that work. She was fantastic.
Yes. So everybody, it feels like there's a lot more motivation in this era because maybe some of it is having a little bit better idea of where you stand and not having it be as mercurial. It seems like a lot of the changes that are happening now are happening because that just the never-ending parade of injuries. Jimmy Uso is now injured, by the way. We don't know how long he's going to be out.
Yeah, I saw
hope
that.
He recovers. You know, hope everybody who's injured anywhere recovers quickly. Don't want anybody hurt. But it'll be interesting to see how they treat Gable going forward because they have the opportunity to continue to build on him being a red-hot heel and move him on to something else because he doesn't need to feud with Sami Zayn all the time, but he could beat him a bunch of times and have Sammy helped build his credibility as a champion. That is a great use of Sammy. If that's the storyline they've had planned out, great job. And I'm fine with not getting what I wanted in WrestleMania as long as it makes sense. I just want it to make sense, Danielle. You know what I mean?
And it feels like, and I think that that's also, I have a lot more patience for that stuff now because things do seem like they are happening either because they make sense. And if something doesn't happen, it is because of something that cannot be, something that cannot be accounted for, an injury or other things like that. It does seem very much like stories are well thought out and aren't going to be tossed into the garbage mm-hmm. the morning of Raw or even sometimes a pay-per-view. Like you said, that mercurial thing of what mood is he going to be in? You know, what place does that have for me on the card? It's risky. But I'm starting of a place of, well, these are the same folks who gave me the NXT I liked. So I got to give them some credit that this particular crew, they've proven it to me on multiple occasions. So I'm going to go ahead and give them the benefit of this doubt. I do want to mention just really quickly, I did watch, I'm discovering something. Mm. I think the weekly show for AEW, maybe not necessarily be always for me. I have been really enjoying the past couple of pay-per-views I've watched. And I did enjoy Danielson versus Ospreay. It was great. That was a great match. So I just wanted to mention that really quickly because I did have a lot of fun with that. And Toni Storm and Rosa was great. Rosa looked fantastic. It felt like coming back in from her back injury, she was looking a little bit rough. But that was a great match. And they got some really good time. They got really good time in that match. So hopefully that kind of thing of those long women's matches that get it, well, long for a women's match, gets a chance to breathe because that was fantastic. I loved it. And congratulations to Willow. And I don't know what's going on with Mercedes. I'm ready. If she's injured, I hope she gets better soon. I am really, really, really ready for her to start wrestling in the ring. Yeah. I need it. I need her to start wrestling.
Also, congratulations to Trick Williams, the new NXT champion. I want to.
Yeah.
The draft starts this Friday on SmackDown, the WWE draft. By the time you listen to this, they will probably have you will have the first picks made. It will continue on night two, Monday, April 29th. In case you don't know, here are the rules. Okay. So on SmackDown, there are going to be 4 rounds, 16 total picks. On Raw, there will be 6 rounds, 24 total picks. So between the two shows, 40 superstars will be potentially changing brands or staying where they are. The champions on each brand are protected. They cannot be drafted anywhere, with the exception of the women's tag team champions. They are eligible because there's only one set of titles. SmackDown gets the first pick because it's obviously a Friday show. They get to pick first on their show. Raw will pick first on Monday, and the rosters will lock on Monday, May 6th. That means that they can do trades or whatever kind of changes they want. I kind of like how they've set this up.
This is really, it feels a little less like bingo, where you just show up and people just kind of get pulled out of a hat, or like, you know, picking teams for dodgeball. This feels a lot more sporty, and the story of the draft itself recently hasn't felt like the draft was a story in as much as it was a plot thing that had to happen, but the draft itself wasn't like centered. And I like turning this into making it a story of the draft and not just, hey, here's where we get all our toys together and shake them up and then put them into their different rings, but having it feel like this is consequential, especially, you know, it makes sense because in all sports, there have always been people who've been really into the drafts and really watching, but especially if you just watched all of the wonderful, lovely, entertaining, amazing, adorable drama with the NWA draft and things that people have been paying attention to, because people who don't watch even basketball were clued in on that draft. And so, yeah, make it a thing, make it an event, turn it into more than just we're shaking things up for this one episode and then everything goes to the new normal. I really like this. I really appreciate it. And I hope that this does have like some really good story consequences just in the draft itself. Oh, and I forgot to mention Swerve, Black AEW chap. Look at that.
Yeah. Also, yeah.
Hey, Black Champs, let's go.
Here's the other beautiful thing. The rosters don't lock until May 6th. The reason why that is significant is because Backlash is a couple days earlier, which means right now, Sami Zayn can't switch brands. But if Chad Gable were to beat him, Sami Zayn could be moved to the other brand and effectively take him out of the picture. Or they could keep it the same brand. So there's opportunity there for things to move around.
Yeah, and there's consequence for what could happen at Backlash. I love this. It's story motivated. It doesn't just feel like, it doesn't feel like an episode of ER where all of a sudden there's a helicopter that crashes out of nowhere. That is a real thing. This feels like this is something motivated and motivates story. Also, did I say NWA or did I say WNBA? Because those are two completely different things. Leave that in, Julian.
Caitlin Clark worked is actually in both companies, so it's fine.
Yeah. Oh, God. That's what I meant. I meant WNBA.
Sure.
not NW.
And now let's welcome our special guest. He is the author of the book Kayfabe, A Love Story. It's the sharpshooter Dave Reuter. Welcome to Tights and Fights, Dave.
Hell, Danielle, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for coming.
Dave and I have been Twitter friends for a few years now because I heard him on another podcast, The Rights to Ricky Sanchez, of course, and another book he wrote. He is a fantastic author. I'm going to talk about other stuff he wrote later. But I also feel like, and I was saying this before we started recording, all of his books are written specifically for me and somehow from inside my head.
I'm actually also working on your autobiography. So I'm about 7 chapters in.
Nice.
So give me about till the end of 2026, Hal, and I'll send that first draft over to you.
Thank you. I can't wait. And I'm sorry. Tell everybody sort of what this book is, sort of prime them for, because everybody should pick up a copy and read it. It's fantastic. Available on Amazon.
Yeah, anywhere you buy books online. Yep. Yeah, the book's called A Kayfabe, A Love Story. It is 87 chapters, paying homage to my favorite WrestleMania, 1987's WrestleMania 3. And what makes this book different is right now, you know, kayfabe's dead. It's been dead for a long, long time. And every book out there now is on the shoot side of things. It's the backstage stuff, who had heat, who didn't have heat, yada, yada, yada. And they're written by wrestlers or, you know, ghostwriters writing on wrestlers' behalf. This book is written entirely in kayfabe. When I thought about writing a wrestling book, I knew I didn't want to write about the shoot side of things because I'm just a fan. I'm not someone who was a professional wrestler. Mm. There's nothing I could have added to the conversation other than kind of regurgitating all these shoot stories and shoot interviews that you can find on YouTube or on podcasts today. So I was like, how can I be different? What can you kind of separate this book from any other book that's out there? And to me, it was, you know, just like everyone else, I was a fan, you know, growing up, you know, wrestling, you know, in the golden era, the Hulk Hogan era, and for the World Wrestling Entertainment, World Wrestling Federation back then, you know, that's something I think I could write about and be relatable. So this book is written, you know, writing about these matches and storylines and wrestlers as if nothing's scripted, if none of the matches are predetermined. Within the book, there's short chapters. I'll sprinkle in stories about myself. And so it is kind of autobiographical in a way. And I hope that it's very relatable for the audience, right? Is that they are reliving these matches and maybe going on YouTube or the network and watching them afterwards and reading these chapters and saying, yeah, I remember watching that. Or I remember watching that with my mom or my dad. So I hope there's relatability about the book. And hopefully it is incredibly different than everything that's out there today.
Yeah, it's really funny. Very relatable. Anybody who grew up a wrestling fan, you'll automatically recognize the feelings, especially when you're a kid. We're in the same age bracket, roughly. Like, I'm older than you, but not old enough I could be your parent. So I remember, like, we all remember when we're kids and get into it. We don't know. We're not thinking in terms of backstage at all. So it feels very real. And this WrestleMania in particular felt very real to me as well. Like, I was inconsolable when I thought Rowdy Piper had retired. I was in tears as a child because I didn't realize wrestlers will come back a year or two later.
About 7 different times.
Yeah, 7 different times. And they'll look a little older every time until one day they show up and go, you can retire, you're fine.
I've talked about this before. This was not my era at all. I started with the Attitude Era. So I did not start being like someone who knew a whole lot about like the old WrestleManias and like older wrestling. And so it's something that I'm kind of getting bites of, like snippets and bits and pieces. It's lovely to me when I hear about people talking about their experience as a kid and like believing in wrestling because I didn't have that. So that was one of the reasons why reading particularly the chapter for the match that we're talking about here was so great, because it's like kayfabe has been always dead for me because I was like a know everything, you know, kid when I was like watching it. So I never got the like Santa isn't real moment. And I've always been really fascinated with that. Particularly, I feel like you see it all the time, but right now, I don't know what it is about that Cody Rhodes dude, but kids really like think that he's that dude. And watching kids, and I, you know, I'm have an emotional connection. I've always had an emotional connection with wrestling, but still able to have that separation from it. So having it be something that is like this like love letter to a time gone by that we don't really celebrate anymore because we can't. You can't kill Santa. Santa isn't dead. That isn't how we tell kids Santa isn't real. We don't tell them he's dead. But you know what I mean? Like, you can't you can't cork that back up. Like, there's no taking that back. I've always been kind of jealous of people who have memories of that kind of wistful feeling of what it's like to be a kid and really believe, like, really believe Piper is gonna go, and not just like, oh, Piper's, I don't know, probably healing an injury or preventing a divorce or like whatever it is that they were doing back then, you know?
There's an innocence about it, right? And
yeah,
I spent 2 years writing this book, and originally I was so naive. I was like, I'm gonna watch every piece of wrestling from 1985 through 1993 because there's only 4 pay-per-views. So like, it's not like there was 12 pay-per-views a year. Like, there was only 4 back then. I made a cardinal mistake, is I forgot that there's actually 52 weeks in a year. It was a lot of wrestling. So, where about 6 weeks in, I was like, oh gosh, I'm on May of 1985. I got a long way to go. So I started basically writing and as I was watching. And it was amazing, you know, looking back, there are certainly some things, and the book's intended to be funny. It's written tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
Make no mistake about it. And there was storylines and, you know, matches that I would watch, you know, back as a 39-year-old guy. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, you know, I'll roll my eyes there. But if it was entertainment value, I'd include it. But the Steamboat Savage match, you know, watching that again, and I've probably seen that match, no lie, 1,000 times, like, I was invested. I was absolutely invested, even though I could probably recite, you know, move by move, you know, like, you know, when Steamboat got his hand raised, you know, like, you felt that. And I think there's like, when it comes to pro wrestling, every fan has one match that kind of draws them in, right? For Danielle, it was probably something in the Attitude Era. For me, it was 1987, WrestleMania 3. So even, you know, rewatching that and kind of knowing the gig, right? You know, now I'm in on the joke, and, you know, everything they said was like a wink and a nod. But even knowing that, there were still some matches or still some moments where I was like, man, they got me there, you know? So I think to rewatch it, not only for the purpose of the book, but to rewatch it as a fan was incredibly enjoyable for me.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, see, for me, it was Stephanie on a fake cross. So we're probably happy that I knew it was fake. We're probably happy I didn't, like, connect to that in a real way. Like,
tomato,
Stephanie right. being sacrificed to, like, an evil cult. that's probably good.
That wasn't me my first guess, but
I liked Mortal Kombat. It felt real Mortal Kombat-y.
Yeah. You would never guess, never. But before we get into our main event, I'm curious how much of whatever product you're watching now, if it's WWE or AEW or TNA, if you are watching it a little bit more actively now, did the writing of this book sort of pull you back in, or have you always sort of kept an eye on it? Where are you with wrestling nowadays?
I watched the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. Obviously, it was in our backyard there, hell. I am not watching it every week. I'm not watching every Raw or every SmackDown, but Twitter, for all its warts, it is nice that people are posting clips. So, as I'm scrolling through the timeline, as I scroll through a lot of the crap I don't want to read, but I will see these clips, and, you know, I'll watch certainly a Bloodline promo. Obviously, when The Rock came out, you know, I'll see all that stuff. I think Cody Rhodes is probably maybe the best babyface that I've seen probably since, you know, early John Cena. So it's like, I see that, and I think the WWE especially is really running hot right now, right? They are doing a lot of things well. I watched WrestleMania. I think thought they did a lot of things well. And certainly kind of, you know, bringing back The Rock, someone from that I'm certainly familiar with from my teenage years in the Attitude Era. I don't watch it religiously, but what I've seen lately, I've been really impressed by. AEW to a lesser extent, but it's more of individual wrestlers. I've always been a big Daniel Bryan guy, so kind of like any stuff I can see of him, I'll certainly watch. But not religiously, given just raising a family. I don't really have that opportunity anymore, but I'm not opposed to it. And even like when I was writing this book, I was, you know, it would be like a Saturday morning or, you know, late Saturday night. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to watch 1988 Wrestling Challenge. You know, worst ways to spend a weekend, for, you know, in my book. So it's been a roller coaster.
Did you see Iron Claw? Have you had a chance to watch that yet?
Oh, I did. I did watch Iron Claw. It's interesting because, you know, here I am. I have the last movie I actually saw in the movie theater. This is so embarrassing. I think it was Creed 2. Which came out like 5 years ago. And before that, as like you can tell, Philly's my entire personality. Before that, I'm not exaggerating, I think it was Rocky Balboa.
Nice.
Which was like basically Rocky VI. So it's like I which is so embarrassing. I'm sure there's probably one or two others that I've seen, but like right now it's like, has this guy ever left the city limits of Philadelphia? I promise you I have. With my movie collection, it's kind of hard to, you know, think that. But I did see Iron Claw, but I was waiting for the price to go down, because when you can stream it, it was like $25, and I was waiting. So actually on the network, I started watching World Class Championship Wrestling, because that's on the network, which starts up in 1982 and 1983. And that's stuff I haven't seen before, because I was, you know, the territory days, everything was regional. And it was like kind of, you know, crazy knowing basically how the story ends with all the Von Erich brothers. But just seeing them at the height of their popularity in this small, you know, probably, you know, hot, you know, auditorium with no air conditioning, and people just going nuts for these brothers. The movie itself, I really liked. I almost feel like I couldn't get invested in the characters because they had to get through so many deaths.
Yeah, it's like so tragic in its own right.
I think it was four, and there was another Von Erich brother named Chris that wasn't even mentioned.
It's so tragic. Yep. They had to cut tragedy because we don't have time for this other incredibly tragic story.
Yeah, I think he died when he was 21, like in 1990 or 1991. And it's like, to me, like that was, and I can't even really blame the movie or the director. It's just, you know, in a 2.5 hour movie, how do you draw out these characters when you know the end result one by one? You know, that are going to pass in this horrific fashion. So I certainly enjoyed it. I thought the wrestling was good, but you know, that wasn't kind of the focal point. But I guess that's my only criticism. But I can't really blame them given the, you know, the tragedy to the family.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Well, let's stay in the past. We're going to go back to WrestleMania 3, which your book focuses on a great deal, and which I saw close circuit at the Philadelphia Spectrum with my parents. In fact, somewhere I'll try and find it after we cut the recording. I have the program from it. I have the original program still.
If kids
to this
only
day.
Understood the concept of closed circuit television, their minds would be blown.
Yeah, kids, we didn't have pay-per-view yet, and we couldn't go to the stadium, so we would go to our local arena, and they would show it on the giant scoreboard screen, you know, the Spectrum where the Flyers and Sixers played. There was a little four-sided screen, and we would all sit in our seats, a filled Spectrum, to watch WrestleMania 3, and it was completely normal. It felt like we were going to WrestleMania.
Was it sold out? And like, could you see clearly, like with the monitors back then, or the big screen? Like, could you even see it?
Yeah, I mean, for the time, it's not like what they have.
HD, I imagine, in 1987, right?
But you could see it. It looked like a sort of a big TV. It was fine quality. I didn't really miss anything, and it was in my memory. It was packed to the rafters. It may not have been in real life. I'll have to ask my dad how well he remembers it, but it was pretty full. I mean, it was a huge deal at that point that WrestleMania had been proven out twice, and this was the biggest one that they'd ever had.
And like, when you say this, Hal, is listening to this story, to me, like, if I was in your shoes, me going with my parents to see that pay-per-view at the Spectrum, that would be part of the book. Right. To me, that is your experience as a fan. So you're talking about Steamboat Savage. Sure, the chapter's about these two professional wrestlers, but I would absolutely have led the introduction to that chapter if I were you with going to the Spectrum in closed circuit television. What a concept in 2024 to even imagine that. And to me, like, there is like that connectability, right? As a fan, right? That's I didn't see WrestleMania 3 at the Spectrum. But I can certainly kind of picture that and picture, you know, that experience there. So I just, like, as you explain that, I can see you kind of beaming it, you know, talking about that. Like, to me, like, that's kind of the premise of what I was, you know, a love story to professional wrestling. And that's kind of what I was aiming for.
Yeah. The story you have for this match, I don't want to spoil it for people. I want to let them read it. The story you have for the match we're going to talk about in particular is Chef's Kiss. Amazing. we're going to talk now about one quarter wrestling that we think deserves some extra attention. This is our main event.
Let's get ready to rock.
Anal bleeding.
Whoa! Yeah!
Get a life, kid.
Rhymes with shit.
Holy shit.
WWE Dynamite.
I love cake. I hate nuts.
Look at this face.
And a hard fight victory.
Live, pal.
What?
It got longer.
I always clock it to see if I can like hear the new ones that Julian adds on, because we never hear them until we record.
The thing is, we space it out enough and we'll have weeks where we won't use it, and then you're just like, you forget about it, and then you're just, it's like, you know,
it's like an old friend. It's comforting. Yeah.
You give up the drink for a little while and you're like, wow, this is the best beer I've had in years.
The Lawrence of Arabia of stings. WrestleMania 3 was sold on Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant for the WWF Championship. But there was one match that stole the show that evening and had a lot of fans talking, even after Hogan slammed Andre. And that is Ricky the Dragon Steamboat versus the Macho Man Randy Savage for the Intercontinental Championship. Starting with the event itself, this was the WrestleMania that's generally credited as having a greater focus on the matches instead of the celebrities, and no matter, even though Alice Cooper was there, no matter how weird WWE's crowd count is, there were a bunch of people there in the Pontiac Silverdome out in Michigan, and it's weird now because WrestleMania has become such a huge event. It was never in as big an arena as the Silverdome for years. Now they're in football stadiums. It's a big outdoor, all the pageantry, which maybe started when they were, what was it, Caesar's? And the Caesar's Palace, and they did all the Roman theme stuff.
Yeah, with the big chariots. And...
yeah, but that, like, in terms of spectacle, I just remember how big it felt. Like, it just, the crowd was live and loud the whole time, just because that many people, even the small talk, carried. Danielle, I'm curious what you know about this show. Like, what is your knowledge of it outside of the 90 billion people who were there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was WrestleMania.
Correct.
And there was a bunch of wrestling. They did some great matches. It was the third one. There had been two that happened previous. And you know what? Correct. You know what's wild? Since then, there have been 37. I'm not sure if you knew that.
Great analysis.
No, it's one of those ones, like, I go back and I watch it. I love wrestling as a sport and what it is. But I will say, if I'm watching something like an independent show, those, I think I can go in and very easily clue into like who this is and enjoy just the wrestling of it. But with, and it very particular, and I think, I mean, WWE are the ones who trained me to do this. So this is entirely their fault. Unless I am like completely caught up on all of the stories, it is very hard for me to zero in and watch an old one. Exactly what you did is the thing that I have been saying I have been wanting to do forever. And I simply do not have time to go back and like watch and go through all of the old weekly shows. I want to really bet. I think I might just start going back and going through like the big four every year. Savage Steamboat is one of those matches that like everyone talks about. Like, I have seen that. Ricky Steamboat is one of those where it's like he is not of like my era and what I watched. But every time I watch someone, watch someone talk about Steamboat, it's like y'all are talking about your wrestle dad in the best way, in a positive way. So if your dad sucks, not him.
Randy Savage, the day has finally come. The minutes, the seconds, we have reached our moment. As you and I climb into the ring, we clash like two titans. But there will only be one winner.
I only hear the best things when people like talk about this match and going back and looking at it. And so I'm really excited to kind of, this is my fly on the wall. I'm just going to be interjecting dumb, snarky ass comments because I'm me and I can't help myself. Like, this, these are my ins for me to go in and go back and watch some of these. So please ignore me until I say something sassy.
Dave, your era that you were in has a lot of memorable moments. Obviously, the first WrestleMania, WrestleMania 4, the Mega Powers colliding a year after that. What is it that makes WrestleMania 3 so special, even outside of, if you were to remove Steamboat Savage from it, what is it that makes that one so special? Or is that the main thing?
It's certainly an integral part there, but I think it was just the massive size of it, right? The number of people. And I've seen pictures where it's like you see cars. Because I feel like the Pontiac Silverdome was a lot like the Philadelphia sports venues where it's just like this giant parking lot. And you can see cars for miles, right? Because even a Link, what does that hold about? 70, 75? That's another 20,000, depending on what Dave Meltzer says, how many people are there between 70 and 95,000. But you see cars for miles. And there's even like small things, hell, that you don't see nowadays that, you know, WrestleMania, even though it was indoors, it was still light out. I think it started on 3 p.m. So those first four matches are like in daylight, right? And then it's Roddy Piper and Adrian Adonis. Then it gets dark, right? And then it's Piper's farewell match, right? And it's just he's the first wrestler that doesn't use the wrestling cart, which, by the way, if there is a wrestling cart for sale, let me know. Or if trades will be accepted. I have a lot of signed copies here, but I would love a wrestling cart. I'd love to go around my neighborhood in it. And I think there's just so many details about it. It's Brutus Beefcake, who people have thoughts on Brutus Beefcake, but he turned babyface that night and then was the barber for the next 5 years until 1993. Mm-hmm. Junkyard Dog, who I loved and who was this absolute huge babyface in the territories, and then when he came to the World Wrestling Federation, just putting on that robe and then them playing Harley Race's theme song, mm-hmm. which was the Gate to Kiev, the classical music. And it's just like, there's just so many moments. My dad's favorite match, he's a sick and twisted man. He loved Bundy squashing Little Beaver. And it's like, I don't agree there, but like, you laugh so hard when Little Beaver, you know, takes the big elbow drop from Bundy. And it's just like, it covers like the gambit from Steamboat Savage with his terrific wrestling. And then it's just kind of the spectacle of it all, you know, up until Hogan Andre.
And you have kind of a sneaky, one of the best tag team matches. And you have a young Bret Hart who made his debut at WrestleMania 2 in the Battle Royal against the British Bulldogs, who were, you have the Dynamite Kid before he got seriously messed up from all his time in Japan and the way, and just his wrestling style. So you get to see guys who are on their way up and guys at the top of their game facing off against one another. That match, that Steamboat and Savage match, is, I remember being so mad when the Macho Man injured Ricky Steamboat by dropping a bell on his throat. I remember watching that on television.
Crushed larynx. Yeah. I mean, how do you recover from, what's the timeline on that? I'm not a doctor, but that's 5 to 7 years, I think.
Yeah.
Ricky came back in 3 months.
Yeah. He's just that good. Training and everything.
Just that good.
And Jesse Ventura says, people say Steamboat has a lot of heart. I personally think he has a lot of throat. So, you know, that's you can't. The science is sound there.
Talk a little bit about what the Macho Man meant for you in that era, because he hasn't turned babyface yet. He comes in as a heel. He's been champion at this point for, what is it, 13, 14 months, something like that?
Yeah.
Like, what did he represent for you watching?
And to me, because even like Andre was a babyface for so long that he'd only turned heel in January of 87. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, you hate Andre. If you see somebody with Bobby Heenan, we have been trained, if you grew up in the 1980s, to hate anyone as part of the Heenan family. But he hadn't been a heel that long. And again, like a lot of the work that Andre was doing on the heel side was like Saturday Night's Main Event, which I believe aired after Saturday Night Live. So I wasn't watching it. So yeah. All these Saturday Night's Main Events, like I was probably seeing that those clips for the first time in the lead up to the matches at WrestleMania 3, right? Because it wasn't like, you know, they're showing these Saturday Night Main Events matches, you know, on some recap show that didn't exist, right? So Savage, in my mind, he was the biggest heel. He was the biggest heel, and my favorite wrestler of all time was Ricky Steamboat. And to put into context how much I liked Ricky Steamboat is, it's a Cheesecake Factory. Bear with me. Hang on. There's a point here. At the Cheesecake Factory, you can actually upload a photo with like a gift certificate. And I used to live right by a Cheesecake Factory. So my brother, when I was in my 20s, got me a gift certificate at Cheesecake Factory and uploaded a shirtless Ricky Steamboat, who was then the NWA World Heavyweight Champion. So here I am getting this gift card, going into Cheesecake Factory, ordering like takeout, and having to pay and hand the hostess this shirtless Ricky Steamboat. And she looks at it for a second and then goes, "Is that you?" Like, yes. And I honestly, I have never gotten a better compliment in my life. Am I Ricky Steamboat? Absolutely. The former NWA and Intercontinental Heavyweight Champion? No, but ma'am, you have just made my year. Thank you so much. And I say that because it's like, that was my guy. So that here I am. That was 1987. Here it was like 2009 or 2010. And my brother still has the foresight to, I can upload literally any picture on this Cheesecake Factory gift card, and I'm choosing Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. So he's, Randy Savage, he was the enemy, right? Yeah. He was the vile guy who crushed my favorite wrestler's larynx. My guy had to go to a speech therapist, right? And thankfully, they had cameras in that doctor's office. HIPAA be damned.
Thank God.
Because we needed to see, what's going on here. And Ricky couldn't speak.
Yeah.
And here I was helpless. And all I could think about is, someone better, you know, give Savage his comeuppance, or I'm going to have my parents drive me up there myself and I'll take care of it.
I got you, Ricky.
I just need a ride. I just need a ride in the back of my mom's station wagon.
And then you can drive the station wagon. You got to decorate it first. But you can drive the station wagon into the silver and then go right up to the ring.
I'll be there in about 19 and a half hours, depending on traffic through Chicago. Sure. Just hang tight.
That's always the question.
I'm on my way.
That's the only question.
Avoid the loop.
Macho Man is this obviously a really weird guy. Memorable but odd promos. Fantastic in the ring. Just like flawless and crisp all the time. And just such a scumbag at that point. Not only for what he did to Ricky Steamboat, but how he treated Miss Elizabeth. I remember going to a house show. I think it was between 2 and 3. I know Paul Orndorff it had to be, because Randy Savage still had the Intercontinental title. And right. Mr. Wonderful, I think, was his opponent. The mind game that Mr. Wonderful played was bringing a bouquet of flowers for Elizabeth that, of course, drove Randy through the roof.
Right.
And at the same time, while Steamboat is out, George the Animal Steel is involved. He's in love with Elizabeth. She is the Fay Wray to his King Kong. Mm. That's driving the Macho Man crazy, including the kidnapping. You cover extensively pretty much the entire lead up here. So the Macho Man comes in, hated champion. You feel like he's done everything possible to sort of hold on to that title. And then you have a resurgent Ricky Steamboat. What is it that's so special? Why are we drawn to him? Because he is one of those guys you're sort of magnetized to. What do you think it is about him?
I think he's like just ultimate babyface, right? Like, he'd never turn heel. Yeah. He was never heel in however long he wrestled, including the territories like in NWA and not Mid-South, but on the coast, North Carolina. He was always a babyface. And, you know, I think he played that babyface in peril so well, right? He sold so well. It's that when his larynx got crushed, and make no mistake about it, his larynx got crushed. I seen the medical reports. I seen the And I think it's like you saw him in so much peril and it hurt so badly that it was just natural to pull for him and to root for him. And a very underrated note, and unfortunately you can't see this on a network, Ricky Steamboat had the best entrance music of all time. He had Alan Parsons' Project Sirius, which is a Chicago Bulls theme song from the Michael Jordan days. That's the best. And it's just like you can't find that original music anymore because of the network, and WWE won't pay for it. It has this really lousy dub music. But I think if you watch that match now, I think it takes away from it because it doesn't have that original music. But when that music hit and Ricky Steamboat has that promo right before WrestleMania 3, and it's probably the best promo he ever did in a WWE, and then that Alan Parsons project hits, you know, you feel something there.
Yeah,
I watched this match writing this book again, but it was just like I was trying on YouTube to find the original music, and you can't find it anymore. But I think it was just this whole package of what Ricky kind of brought to the table is easy as a kid to perform.
There are performers, and when you're an actor, it's great both ways. If it's great if an audience hates you, because that means you're sort of predisposed to play villains. But then there are people for whom the audience will immediately be on their side. He is one of those people. My wife Jennifer is another one. When she performs, and she does this country singer character named Carter Parton Rogers, and I've seen her go to comedy shows where it's all young comics talking about their genitalia and what they want done to it, and that's not what she does at all. She goes in front of that crowd and has them singing along with her at the end of 5 minutes. And it's like, it's not something everybody can do. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat is a great example of that. And he's, again, another guy who's so good and precise in everything that he does that even when he came back later in, what, his 60s and had that mini feud with Chris Jericho, of all of those legends, he was the guy who looked like, oh, he could just still do this. You can just put him in the ring now and he's ready to go.
It was a Backlash, the one right after WrestleMania. He fought him in a singles match. Like, he's still had it.
Yeah.
And he just seemed like a guy that, you know, even as, you know, wrestling fans got more and more jaded, like, I can't imagine the fans turning on him because he's been a babyface for so long. And, like, maybe there was a case, maybe in 1998 or 99, maybe they would have got tired of his act. But it's hard for me to imagine that the fans would turn on him for being, you know, too white meat, or, you know, kind of too, you know, too cliche. I think he just had that. He played that role so well that you couldn't even imagine any scenario where he even would turn on him.
Yeah.
Because he had that, you know, that babyface role down pat.
I think he's probably going to go down as like the only person who is the forever white meat babyface. Yeah. Like that is, and that is, and that's, I mean, that's a legacy right there, because how many times have we said that it's really hard to make someone that kind of babyface out the box? You've got it. People try it. It fails over and over and over again. And then you turn them heel and then you turn them back into babyface and it winds up working, but they keep little things. But to have someone just come out to the audience, be presented as, this is the dude, this is the guy that you are going to go for. Even with Cody, as much of a like white meat to the bone, white marrow baby face as he is, he had to go through that period of being a complete dick with the elite before he could get to there. And that is something that is one of those, the last of your kinds. We are never going to see something like what he was able to achieve by being able to stay that character and stay empathetic and not have people be like, oh, well, he's like corny now.
Yeah.
Right. It's certainly a bygone era, right? It's like, I feel like every superstar now is babyface, and then the fans tire of them. They turn heel. They kind of get their mojo back, and then they turn babyface again, right? Roman Reigns is probably a great example. Yeah. CM Punk. The Rock, obviously. So it's like
Bailey right now.
That seems to be the formula. But, you know, back then you can kind of get away with, you know, this guy's a baby face and always be a baby face. But but we can't pull it off in 2024. But Ricky had it down in 1987. Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah. And he's also one of those guys, I think, if you plopped him in at the age he was then, now he would get over because of the work that he did. I mean, the match between two of them.
Oh, yeah.
The two of them on that card is different than any other match. It's the match you could pull out and plug in today. It would work on WWE programming. It would work for AEW, where they have just some of the best wrestlers in the world putting on these matches. What are the things that make it stick out for you outside of the story part, which is obviously flawless? What are the actual physical parts of the match that sort of draw you to it and make it so memorable for you?
I think there was no match even remotely to that speed and tempo back then. It was certainly a big man's game. Everything was slow and methodical. And, you know, in rewatching all this wrestling over 2 years, I saw a lot of chin locks. I saw a lot of chin locks. I got my fair share, especially on like those like a Madison Square Garden or Boston Garden house shows, you know, that was part of primetime wrestling. I mean, Iron Mike Sharp, you really used to sink those in. And that was about a good 7 minutes there. Steamboat Savage was just on another level. I think it was the speed of it. And I would say that's, to consider the number of false finishes, I think there's about 23 or 24, it was probably the match to kind of set up in kind of modern wrestling today. Now, like that, all wrestling matches today are false finishes, right? Back then, the difference was is you didn't kick out of someone's finisher three or four times in the same match. But, and you know, now if you can do a superplex, no one's getting pinned on 1, 2, 3, they're going to kick out. But like back then, I think that was the match that most of it was like the precursor of the wrestling that you see today. They have so many false finishes and sunset flips and small packages and just the speed of it. And I think there's just so many things that make it stand out because it was so different and unique than anything that was done at that time. Like if I think about the wrestlers back then who could have maybe put something along the same parallels, it's probably the Bulldogs. Mm-hmm. Maybe a really young Bret Hart, Tito Santana. Now, that's like a really short list, right? And I just don't think there's any two guys at that time in 87 that kind of matched up with them, except for maybe the Dynamite Kid, who was just obviously a tag wrestler at the time in the World Wrestling Federation. And I think the other big thing is the announcing. And I see this like argument a lot is, you know, everyone prefers, you know, back then in the golden era of Monsoon and Heenan, which I completely get from a comedic standpoint. But I think from like Bobby Heenan, for how great he is, and he's fantastic, obviously, is I think he relied on a sense of humor and his joking that it kind of took away from these big moments, these big matches. Whereas I think Jesse Ventura was probably the better, you know, protagonist for Monsoon because he kind of, you know, he knew the kind of the situation and kind of understood the gravity of it. And I think that they were so good as announcers, as, you know, Jesse Ventura thinking that Dave Hebner was counting slow and Monsoon saying Dave Hebner's doing a great job and Ventura saying you got an answer for everything. And, you know, and it's, you know, Ventura saying, you know, Steamboat's doing chop to the eyes. Those are illegal. Steamboat's using a closed fist. Those are illegal. As if any wrestler has ever been disqualified for using a closed fist. So I don't know if Ventura and Heenan would have got the same effect or the same results, you know, on commentary as Ventura and Monsoon did. I thought they were fantastic, and I think it certainly kind of enhanced the overall, you know, product of the match.
Yeah, I mean, they all combine so well. The wrestlers, obviously, you know, it's weird to take. When I say story, I meant the build up to it. You can't take away from the story of the match itself, even if you didn't know the build. I think we have the four people around the ring and then the two commentators that do such an excellent job building this picture. Mm-hmm. Danielle, someone who didn't, I mean, this is kind of a perfect example. Someone who's not as familiar with that. What was your reaction when you saw that match for the first time?
Dude, I 100% co-sign everything about the announcing, because also, and it is obviously like they're driving the story, helping to build out the story of the match. Also, I like when they tell us what moves people are doing, because that's how I learned them. Mm-hmm. You know, I learned by hooked on graps. Like, that was it for me. It's like, you say it and then I see it, and now I know what that is. So the first time I watched it, I was very much prepared for it to be a slower, more old school rest holds please kind of match. And so I was very pleasantly surprised at how quickly everything was moving. And I haven't really, I mean, Savage is, maybe this is just my experience going back and watching it, but even culturally, I feel like everyone gets Savage's deal. I knew what to expect from a Randy Savage match. I've seen him a whole bunch. Right. Ricky Steamboat was one that I haven't seen a lot. Getting to watch someone, especially back then, really go, and both of them being able to keep up styles, it was a really pleasant surprise. And also one of those moments where, oh, I wish we had HD back then. I really wish I could have really seen what this looked like. But you know, I bet everyone's eyes back then were fine.
I mean, Hell watched it on closed circuit without an issue, apparently. So he was fine. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. From 90 feet away.
Yeah. From the 93,000 people that somehow packed into the Spectrum. We all saw it together. It was amazing. Yeah. It's so crystal clear. You feel like you're there when you watch it.
Yeah. Because
you get so, it's one of those things. Like, sometimes if you're watching a movie or a television show or a great wrestling match, it's like the world around you melts away.
Yeah.
And you're right there. You're on location in the set. You're in the actual arena. This is one of the matches that does that, because you're so drawn into it.
Mm-hmm.
We asked people from the Nation of Conversation what they thought about this match. Here's what they said. Butch says, the best match of at least the first five Manias. I'm willing to bet that someone somewhere is watching it for the first time and is falling in love with pro wrestling. Mm-hmm. What better legacy could there be than that? Robert said, this was before my time, but it was one of the most rewatched bootlegs on our family shelf.
Hey.
right? We didn't need to pay for it. I wore it out before my brother got me an official copy for Christmas 2001. Editor's note, that was Ice Cream Christmas, which I still have boxed up. If you have any thoughts on the Steamboat versus Savage match, or if you've not seen it before, go watch it and then let us know what you thought by visiting us on all the socials. You can find the links to those in our show notes. When we come back, we've got three things from wrestling that we want to share with you. That's up next on Tights and Fights.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
The Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom.
Diablo 4.
Final Fantasy 16.
Street Fighter 6.
Baldur's Gate 3.
Starfield.
Spider-Man 2.
Master Detective Archives Rain Code for Nintendo Switch? No, is that just me?
It's a huge time for video games.
You need somebody to tell you what's good, what's not so good, and what's amazing.
I'm Jason Schreier.
I'm Maddie Myers.
And I'm Kirk Hamilton. We're the hosts of Triple Click, a video game podcast for anyone who likes games.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
They've got a podcast. Tights and Fights is the name.
Welcome back to Tights and Fights. I'm Hal Loblin, and I'm joined today by...
Danielle Radford.
And...
Dave Reuter.
Now it is time to share some of the joy of wrestling with you. This is the three count.
Watch my three count. One, two, three. Get out of there.
That was sick.
Dave, our guests go first around here. What would you like to put over?
If I could, to piggyback off Ricky or Randy Savage's greatness, I'm going to put over what I think is the greatest WrestleMania story of all time, which is Randy Savage versus Ultimate Warrior, WrestleMania 7, and Randy Savage getting back together with Miss Elizabeth, which is the last chapter of my book, which is the ultimate wrestling love story. So after you watch Steamboat Savage, skip ahead like Super Mario 3 to another world and put on WrestleMania 7 and watch Ultimate Warrior versus Randy Savage.
I love it. Yeah, classic. Danielle, what would you like to put over?
I recently saw a really fun account. It is an art account, and most of what they do is it looks like it's very, very heavily manga-inspired art of wrestlers. So a bunch of really good WWE stuff. They take commissions, and so I saw one where they did a commission of someone posing with Bayley, like what it would have looked like if they were at Fan Access. And they've done a couple where they've done them almost as panels of, like, each one a different panel of a book. I did do my research. They are the fingers and then the eyes do not look like AI. It is very good. So it looks like they put out art very quickly. So I had to make sure. The name of the account is Norberto Gaetan, I think is how you pronounce it. I'm going to spell it in case I'm wrong. Norberto Gaetan. Go ahead and check that Twitter account out. It's just all fantastic art and recreating these great moments from recent things that you've seen. And, you know, like going back and doing past wrestlers, and it's just really cute. And it combines two of my favorite things, which is comic book style and wrestling. So obviously I'm super into it. So go check that out on X, formerly known as Twitter. I'm just going to say it because I hate saying it. No one calls it X. We never will.
I'm going to do a little double header for you, neither of which is directly wrestling. One is from our co-host, Lindsay, who is under the weather. She wanted to put over Josh Johnson, who has a clip here talking about understanding Taylor Swift fans. Here's a little piece of it.
Same way that there are a lot of little girls and young women out there that want to be Taylor Swift, or older women that see themselves in Taylor Swift. I think every man in here has looked at a wrestler and... Every man in here has watched some wrestling at some point and then walked away like, I wish somebody would f*** with me. Like, I wish... I would just...
And you thought there wasn't going to be wrestling in there.
There it is. That is not the first time that we have compared Taylor to wrestling. It will not be the last. We have done it way too many times, and it's fantastic. And thank you, because that clip is actually 100% perfect.
Fantastic. So Dave has written this amazing book. Again, it's called Kayfabe, a Love Story. I will say the name again in just a second. But I want to put over his other two books, which are fantastic, A Phillies Odyssey and A Sixers Odyssey. Even if you are not a Philadelphia sports fan, what's great about this book, Kayfabe, a Love Story, and similar in these other books, is what you learn about Dave and his sense of humor that makes it eminently relatable. Even if you don't, no matter what team you root for, no matter what sport, you know athletes that are on the margins that most people forget about, but that you have some strong relationship with. They're fantastic books. Also, like, digestible and small essays, so you can go and come back and go in between all of them. I cannot recommend them enough. I was so excited when you told me that you had written this book, and then you were nice enough to send me a copy. We were able to have you here. So you want to do yourself a favor. Dave is a very funny, very relatable writer, so you should read everything that he writes. I'm putting him over double because I am legitimately so excited that he is here. Dave, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. That was great. That was in the great 3 minutes. I'm going to have you call my wife and tell her the exact same thing. You just everyone needs a hype man. You're great, Hal. I appreciate it.
I'm here for you. The book, again, is Kayfabe, a Love Story. You can get it wherever you get books online, and I encourage you to do so. It is fantastic. Where else should they follow you? Dave, where else do you want them to go?
Yeah, I'm not calling it X. I'm calling it Twitter, but it's @Where's Ben Rivera. in honor of random fifth starter from the Phillies, Ben Rivera, at Where's Ben Rivera. And I do have some copies of the book. So if you want to DM me, reach out to me, I'd be more than happy to sign a copy, send one out to you if you want to kind of bypass Amazon or whatnot. So I do have a handful that I'd be more than happy to send out. I normally have a random wrestling card that I will include with the book if that is ever enticing. Maybe not. Maybe it is. But yeah, follow me and reach out to me. Would have been more than happy to. I just want people to read it. Hope they enjoy it.
Yeah. By the way, I got some cards with the copy that I received. I got a Red Rooster, which I'll show right now. You can sort of see it. It's not reflecting too badly.
That's valuable, Hale. I would hold on to that one.
I mean, I think the Skinner might be the real money right here. And of course, the late great Gorilla Monsoon. So I have these three. So this is no joke. You will get these. These are actual classic cards. And then you get the book as well, which is the real prize. That does it for this episode of Tights and Fights. Your hosts were Danielle Radford along with me, Hal Lublin. You can follow me at Hal Lublin on all the socials. Listen to my other podcasts or don't. I'm not going to tell you what to do. Danielle?
I do have some stuff coming up. If you are a big fan of seeing me on things on Dropout, I'm not sure when my episode of actually comes out, but that will be coming out. In addition to maybe you'll see me do some other fun stuff. Who knows? You'll find out. Oh, yeah, no. They already showed that I was in this. I'm also in some episodes of Breaking News. So, hey, yeah, go watch me. Behind the paywall.
I can't wait. I actually just subscribed to Dropout and I'm excited to watch your stuff.
Oh, yeah. I'm on there a bunch. It's wild. Thank you all for liking me on
it's not
there.
Wild.
I like
it's
paying.
Deserved.
They
should be thanking
rent,
you.
And I enjoy,
they should
on
be
the
thanking
shows.
You, Danielle. let's be straight. You're the one providing the hilarity.
Hype Man
Hal. I'm telling you.
Look
I'm telling
at
you, what a talent. What a talent.
I'm telling you. I mean, that's what I'm here for. I'm here for all of you. Including our producer, who is the Intercontinental Champion, Julian Burrell. Senior producer at Maximum Fun is Laura Swisher. Mike Eagle is the voice behind our theme music, so we're putting him over for that. Keep up with us all week long on the socials, including special bonus videos on Instagram. If you're not following us on Instagram, you're letting the best in life pass you by. We'll be back next week to talk even more, you guessed it, wrestling.
Yeah, here comes the pain.
Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows
supported
directly
by you.